Well, how did that happen, Tracy? I told you the door was open. There was somebody there going to leave it open to let you in, and 2 minutes later you get there and the door's locked.
Yeah, somebody's trying to keep me out.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you're here. Why can I not bring up this article right now that I want from Brownstone that you sent to me?
Oh, was that the comfortable collapse?
Yeah. And I did not print it. I saved it on my laptop. And
you sent it to me on September 18th.
Oh, I sent it to you originally? Okay.
Yes. So if you want to look that data.
Well, it's probably saved on the home computer, not on this one.
Can't help you there.
No? Something happened.
I can send it, this wonderful thing called
we'll
technology.
We'll just talk about it. Let's start there because we had a lot we wanted to talk about this morning, but let's start there because the statistics on this about how our American society has changed over the last several years, they're just shocking. And when I look at the fact that the same people were the heads of our federal health agencies for 40 and 50 years while this was happening right under their noses. Why?
Well, and this article actually talks about some of the marketing ploys that were done to make everyone just feel like, again, you know, and we always talk about we don't shame anybody for anything, mm-hmm. but how obesity actually has just been normalized. Right. So if you look at some of the numbers, so it says obesity prevalence, once a marginal condition, ballooned. In the early 1960s, about 13% of adults met the criteria for obesity.
Give me that figure again.
13% of adults met the criteria for obesity in 1960. So by 2010, the figures had reached 36%. And today, more than 40% of American adults live with obesity. So... And it's interesting, there's some more numbers here. It says, the data tell the story with unflinching clarity. So in 1960, the average American man weighed 166 pounds, while
these numbers are amazing.
Well, and I put it up to today because it didn't give 2025.
Right.
So the average woman weighed 140 pounds. By 2002, men averaged 191 pounds and women 164 pounds. So representing gains of more than 20 pounds per person in a single generation. So if you take that 2002 to now, that's another 20 years, which is another 10 pounds. So now the average is men being 200 pounds and women being 175 pounds. I mean...
And it's not that long back. I remember, maybe it's a decade ago. Yeah, probably about a decade ago. They were talking about when airlines... design the seating and the spacing in the seating. Mm-hmm. What does it say in there about it?
Well, it's interesting because they actually talk about, that's how they open this article. Walk into any American airport today and pause, right? So you're looking around at the travelers. You're looking at a country that our grandparents wouldn't recognize, which I absolutely believe to be true. In less than three generations, the very shape of America, the American body has shifted so dramatically that we would once... have been regarded as rare, as concerning, is now routine. Airplane seats have been widened, retail clothing racks have been extended, mannequins have been reshaped, and soda cups have been enlarged. Entire industries have recalibrated to accommodate a physiology that is neither healthy nor sustainable.
Yeah. And back, like I say, it was like a decade ago, it was talking about the fact that the airline seat was like designed for like a 180-pound adult. And what were those numbers you had now?
Well, that's...
And I want to let me say something. You said it once already, but let me say this again. This is not about trying to fat shame anybody.
No.
This not at all. This is about the health of individuals and the quality of life of individuals. And those in this category now, of which is this large percentage of over 40% in this category, we talk about the cost of health care in America, $1,800 a year additional health care costs for individuals in this category. Now, that's even numbers are going to be even worse because of the cost of Ozempics and Wegovy's and all. And for some individuals, I understand that, you know, they've not been able to get it under control. I get that.
Well, we talk about medications generally should be, in that case, I believe, used as kind of a last resort.
Yes.
Right? That you've tried everything else. And again, if you're on a medication, the goal should be to lessen it to whatever
yep.
degree it can be lessened to, or to be off it 100%. That should always be the goal.
Right. And but the idea about the change in the American food, and they have the information in here about how much of, particularly for young people, we were talking yesterday at home about the trying to educate a younger generation to avoid, you know, using drugs and the drug addictions. But you had pointed out a long time ago that many of the ultra-processed foods themselves are formulated in a way that they, too, become addictive, which, mm-hmm. And again, without proper nutrition, that makes somebody more likely to have addictions in other parts of, whether it's drugs, food, whatever. I think the science is all behind that now.
Yeah, well, and all these ultra-processed foods are purposely made to override our own physiology of
yes.
feeling full. Again, the sugar, you know, when you look back in, you know, 100 years ago, if you were eating something sweet,
yep.
generally, if it was a candy bar, it was expensive,
mm-hmm.
so it was very minimal. And your sweetness was really related to fruit intake.
Exactly. We're going to take a quick break. Going to get into sports report from the Zoles and back. It's already 8:17 on Hudson Valley Folks Live. Tracy Hay, registered dietitian, back in a minute on the Beacon.
Now, back to Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on the Beacon.
8:21, excuse me, on the Beacon. Got some cold weather coming the next several days. Going to have temperatures down around the freezing level. Good time for you to visit dshomeservices.com, dshomeservices.com, and look at the services they offer to help you make your home winter ready. Don't wait. It's like we were talking earlier about, you know, get that kit in the car, get ready for winter, do it early, and then sit back and relax. So Tracy, a registered dietitian in studio. We were talking about how, you know, the American diet has changed the last 60 years, 50 years, and in, you know, a very short time, we've had these huge changes in Americans' health. And at the point in time where we should be seeing, we saw increasing life expectancy, and yet now in the last 15 years, and this, Tracy, this has gotten nowhere near the attention publicly that it should have been in terms of the shortening of the life expectancy, the increased cost of our health care. But when you look behind the curtain and you see that the food companies, the pharmaceutical companies, the media companies all have common ownership, and the pharmaceutical and the food companies are major, major, major revenue sources for the media companies. And it's like, you know, what's the expression? Follow the money?
Mm-hmm. I believe this article talks about that too. but I just wanted to make, you know, go back to something we spoke to in the previous segment
yes.
where you were mentioning that adults with obesity, you know, generate on average around $1,800 more in health costs per year than normal weight.
And that's just direct medical cost. Now add to that.
Right. So that doesn't reflect things like lost productivity. You're just talking about it. Shortened lifespans.
Yes.
Military unfitness. Millions of family that are also managing the downstream complications, right, which are diabetes, heart disease, liver failure, sleep apnea, infertility, and cancer.
Yeah.
All come from that obese state. So, you know, again, it's redefining this normal hasn't been, it's really not been fair, you know, because again, people, like I said, their brains are actually being tricked.
Yes.
You know, it going to that, they actually call it the bliss point. And it talks about, Today, more than half of all calories consumed by American adults come from ultra-processed foods, which are engineered products designed for bliss point palatability and low cost. Right? So, and among the youth, the proportion is closer actually to two-thirds. So we talk about they're calorie dense, mm-hmm. but they're nutritionally hollow.
Yes.
Right? So they're engineered to override your satiety mechanisms. And
I'm glad you said that because I can never pronounce that word for some reason.
Satiety.
I have, it's one of those words I have a hang up on. Satiety. So, satiety.
And all of this promotes,
in other
like
words,
I said,
where you feel like, okay, your brain turns off, says, okay, I've had enough to eat.
It doesn't turn off.
It doesn't turn off. That's,
right.
And that's a problem. And by the way, many of the beverages that have the artificial sweeteners in there also override that.
Well, we've talked about that because it's still sweet.
Yes.
So your body's still registering the sweet.
Right.
So you're still going to have the insulin release. You're going to still have the inflammatory state that happens. So, you know, and again, with not only the food, right, but then we move less, right? Our jobs, we sit a lot. You know, myself, you know, listeners have heard that I do early intervention, which actually I drive to people's houses.
Right.
So, you know, and I was just saying off air, when I worked at the hospital, I used to work at Vassar when I first moved here, and I was taking the stairs to different floors. I was up and down constantly going into patient rooms. And, you know, when I left there to do what I currently do, and I'm driving a lot more, mm-hmm. I put on 10 pounds in a very short amount of time, despite walking and doing other things, but it was just what I was doing at my job.
Right.
So that's
now you also have paperwork you have to, you're sitting doing paperwork reports and all.
Correct. Phone calls and, yeah. You know, more definitely less things that are of a physical nature.
And that's representative of how much in our society has changed in that regard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, and look at how much the kids sit in front of screens, mm-hmm. and, you know, social media. And again, so, and it's interesting because when we talked about kind of a cultural rebranding, this article pointed out in 2019, Nike unveiled plus size mannequins in a flagship London store and hailed the move as a gesture of inclusivity and representation.
Brownstone's website just came back online. It was on their end. Everything else on my computer worked. And so, again, if somebody wants to look this up, The Comfortable Collapse, How America Learned to Pretend Obesity is Normal. And Tracy, this really has to point out, I'm going to say it one more time, this is not about fat shaming. This is about helping folks understand how to enhance their own health and quality of life.
Well, and again, we've said this, and the article actually makes note of this too. Okay, it says, no one disputes that people deserve dignity and clothing that fits them well.
Correct.
Absolutely not. But retail is not an altruistic enterprise. Right? So the introduction of larger mannequins was not a campaign for justice. It's a marketing strategy, right? Representation has its place. The problem is when representation blurs into normalization, when physiology that carries increased risk of disease is recast as simply another aesthetic option. So, you know, again, and they did that with some clothing sizes too. You know, what was a 6 is now maybe closer to an 8 or 9. And, mm-hmm. and they're trying to make people feel better with a number. But again, you're really not being fair because, again, we're normalizing sickness and disease. And again, you know, people, you want to live your best life.
Yes.
You know? And we've become just, you know, it's almost normal to feel not well.
The opening of the article, walk into any American airport today and pause. And that's because over the years, you know, when I, you know, if I fly back and forth to Colorado or wherever I'm going. And so sometimes you are sitting and waiting. And that's been my observation. And the one that really stands out to me is I was flying back from Colorado. This has got to be 5 or 6 years ago. And I had a layover in the Detroit airport. I think I was in Detroit. And they have the monorail that moves you within the mm-hmm. airport. And there were two individuals there who were very overweight to the point that they had airline attendants wheeling them in those little portable wheelchairs. But these were individuals who maybe had other health conditions. I don't know that. But they were seriously overweight. But these were individuals who were in their 40s or 50s. These were not, you know, really elderly individuals. And that was the point that I thought about, gosh, how much of life are you missing out on? You know, your ability to be mobile and do what you want to do. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, especially, if, you know, again, with if you're at that age, at 40s, right, you still have, you might have young children, right, or
yes.
grandchildren. And, yeah, you really, keeping active is important. And
exactly. Yeah. We got a quick break coming up here, 8:30 on Hudson Valley Focus Live on The Beacon. Let's get that break in and back with more with Tracy Haight on Hudson Valley Focus Live on The Beacon.
It's Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipes on The Beacon.
Is this in the one of the brownstone?
Yeah.
So let me mention this again. The article from brownstone.org, The Comfortable Collapse, How America Learned to Pretend Obesity is Normal. How far down in the article is that?
It's probably the third page, I think.
Okay. And what did you say is the cultural collapse?
It's called cultural rebranding.
There we go.
Disease.
Yeah. Even as the physiology deteriorated, the culture adapted by redefining what counts as normal. This is where mannequins and marketing come into play.
And I like how they named this. They call it cultural anesthesia, which reassures without healing, consoles without condemning, teaches people to accept a physiology that will shorten their lives and bankrupt their health. It's not compassion. It's capitulation.
Yeah. Yeah. And genuinely, I think there are lots and lots and lots of folks who are not aware. And you wouldn't think the fact that we've got these, you know, Center for Disease Control, the National Institute of Health. Oh, surely they're staying on top of this and making sure that we have the best information. No, we're not. That's the thing that's unbelievable.
Yeah. They're not altruistic.
No.
So.
And the attacks on RFK Jr. now. Yeah, I understand he's not a medical researcher. But boys and girls, the people who have let us down the last 40 years are those people who were the medical researchers. Now, if we go beyond, if you go into the CDC website or the NIH website, you will find that the medical researchers have been telling this story for 15, 20, 25, 30 years.
Yeah, there's information there because we've had many articles from both places.
Yes.
That are, you know, validate what we talk about.
U.S. Department of Education, mm-hmm. Agriculture under the SNAP program. The information is there, but they have not. So who is responsible for oversight? For not seeing, who should have been seeing, the alignment of the information to the reality as to what was happening in policy to the public.
Well, and I feel like, too, it's a little bit like the frog in the water, right? This didn't happen, it seems like, overnight, but like you said, since really the 1960s, we've talked about this. And, you know, we've talked about the snack companies that came into being in the 1970s. I mean, before that, you didn't have all these snacks,
right?
Snacking is really an American concept, and I'm sure you've been to Europe. You see people snacking like the Americans do?
No.
They eat real food. They go to fresh markets. You know, here, you know, sometimes people get annoyed if they have to go to the store more than once a week. And, you know, I'm going down to Adams or Acme or wherever I need to get my stuff. I'm probably shopping 2 to 3 times a week.
Yep.
Right, getting fresh food because I'm using it. I'm not having it sit around.
And that's an issue because transportation is an issue for lots of people. And in some of the areas where they do not have the access, you know, to a market that they can walk to, that's a problem.
Well, then we've talked about the frozen, mm-hmm. you know, fruits and vegetables and things like that in that kind of a, you know, scenario, for sure. But, you know, again, we talk about too in the cars, right? So you talk about marketing. I didn't have a drink holder in my first car. I mean, you know, and the drink holders have gotten bigger.
Gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. No,
right.
No question about that.
So, and so have the seats in cars and SUVs. And I just feel like, again, it's just an incremental kind of crawl, right? Like, and before you notice, or before, you know, all of a sudden you're noticing, oh my goodness, how do we get here? So, and you again, know, it's about education, right?
I don't know what made me think about this morning. I know, well, maybe, I guess it was this article, but when I was driving in this morning and I was thinking about the time period of how we've witnessed these changes, but then I got thinking about the obesity of government itself. It exactly parallels this timeline. It exactly parallels. Robbie, how much time have I devoted to talking about the, you know, going back 60 years ago when a single income household could buy a home in their 20s?
Mm-hmm. A good amount of time.
And all of a sudden, it just, I don't know, it just absolutely hit me this morning thinking about the time period covered in this Brownstone article with the absolute growth of government itself and how overburdening it is today, to the point that it is just like obesity in humans is undermining our health, the obesity in government is literally undermining the health and well-being of a nation.
Well, you talked about homes for a second, and I think I saw a figure that the median homeowner age a few years ago is like 33, and today
that was just 4 years ago.
And then today is like 56.
Well, that was on the second home buyer. It's 38 for the first time. It was 33 4 years ago for first time home buyer. Now it's 38. It went up five years age in 4 years time period.
Was that a single home buyer? Or was that like a couple?
A family.
So it was a family.
Yeah.
So it's a two income.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you that I bought my townhouse,
mm-hmm.
right, as when I was single, and I bought that in 2002 by myself.
Right.
I don't know that I could do that today.
Right. No. Today, so you have to ask yourself, in all of this, all of this, ask yourself, what changed? The aggregate level of taxation from local to state to federal is massively different now than it was 50 years ago.
Well, and we've talked about that too, how people get duped into thinking that all these ultra-processed foods, I mean, they are cheap, but again, they're subsidized, right? So, but we've debunked that too, that you can eat, you know, on the, cheaply with buying fresh whole foods.
Yeah.
But again, if you're running in, you're in a hurry, because that's the problem too, right? Look at our society now. Who sits down really and has a meal? You're racing, you know, your kids to sports or theater or just somewhere, right? The parents are working, coming home, trying to get dinner, picking dinner up maybe on the way home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very different. And all of that, too, we don't really think about this piece, but affects your digestion, your assimilation of nutrients, your, you know, just choking down food versus...
Well, the other issue had to do with... And we have so much to go over because we skipped a couple weeks in here,
mm-hmm.
but the idea that many of the medications, prescriptions that individuals are taking today that are impacting your body's microbiome, your ability to actually absorb the nutrients out of that, mm-hmm. are being impacted by the numbers of prescription medications, and that even after you might go off those prescription medications, there's a fairly long-term residual negative impact on your body's microbiome.
Correct, which is why I've talked about everybody should be taking some sort of probiotics, prebiotics, mm-hmm. postbiotics. And it was interesting because that was the article you sent me. I went and looked at that first, and, you know, I do my highlighting and my researching before I come in. But then when I actually saw this article you sent me a few weeks back. You can tie the two, which we can actually do if, because there's not enough time in the even you know in the next segment to do that.
Right.
We can kind of leave a little bit of a cliffhanger. But is that your microbiome has all to do with obesity. So if you are wrecking the microbiome from the time of infancy, because some of those
which is indicated in some of these articles.
Yes. So some of those are the reflux medications, Prevacid, Prilosec, Pepcid, that a lot of these infants are put on for quote-unquote reflux. And we know that's one of my specialties. I could talk about that for a long time. So if we are affecting an infant's microbiome to set them up to be, for an obese state later on in life, what's going on here? Instead of treating we're treating a symptom mm-hmm. with the reflux instead of the cause. Mm-hmm. And I can, this is what I do. So.
But you're coming into it from a medical perspective. I can look at it from my background of managing risk and adding up the variables in here. So I'm sitting here, we know we need to get a break in here. I'm sitting here thinking about, you're talking about those reflux things that are interrupting the process. I'm thinking about maybe putting some of the acetaminophens on the same time that mm-hmm. they're using that because of the fact that they had the multiple vaccines at the same time. We're overwhelming the body's natural responses as near as what I would add up.
In many areas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Quick break. Already 8:46 on Hudson Valley Focus Live. Tracy Hay, registered dietitian, back in a minute on The Beacon.
Live, local, and unafraid, this is Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
It's already 8:49 on Hudson Valley Focus on The Beacon on this Friday morning. I want you to get out and have a great time this weekend. You can go out and explore this wonderful Hudson Valley of ours, maybe some of the history sites that are out there and, the pick your own things and get some real food. Right, Tracy?
Absolutely.
Helps if we turn your microphone on.
My bad.
Family Friends Fun Food Friday. And make it the Family Friends Fun Food Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Absolutely.
So where did you want to take the conversation?
So if you actually go to the other article we're talking about, the Brownstone, right? The 1950s baseline, kind of go down and talk about just a little bit of the incentives for obesity, which we've touched on kind of throughout the show.
Right.
But they put this, again, nicely, succinctly. So talking about the obesity epidemic and how it's not an accident, right? It's the product of incentives. Food companies profit when people eat more and in larger quantities. Value is now measured in calories per dollar, not nutrients for life.
This is important that until you and I started having these conversations, I'm reasonably well. I knew nothing about this. Nothing about this until you and I started having these conversations a dozen years ago.
Yeah, when you overheard Doc Rick in the other studio.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and here's your pharmaceutical companies profit with chronic diseases when chronic diseases linger, right? Because you're a lifelong pharmaceutical, recipient there, especially for obesity and its complications. So that's now considered a growth market. Retailers profit when larger sizes are normalized and more units are sold. Politicians profit when difficult policy reforms such as agricultural subsidies, zoning changes, and school meal standards are replaced with slogans and inclusivity.
So this is really something. Retailers profit when larger sizes are normalized, more units are sold. Politicians profit when difficult policy reforms such as agricultural subsidies, zoning changes, school meal standards are replaced with slogans about inclusivity. And getting out of this is enormously, enormously difficult. And when you have I genuinely believe that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is sincere in seeing a problem. And what everything I have heard him say is he wants to bring people together and actually look at what has caused it. That's the same thing right. we've said.
Right. Well, and that's what I look for in anybody I, you know, do education with, right? I look for the cause.
Right.
I look for the underlying issue, and that's what you treat, right? So, and again, when we're talking about compassion, and I really like how this article says here, the way forward requires disentangling people from pathology. Individuals must be respected and never humiliated.
Right.
But the epidemic must be denormalized, not celebrated. That means telling the truth plainly. Obesity is not neutral. It's a disease
so
state.
So if I go back to the beginning of 2020 with COVID, within 60 days, when the really good states' health departments had their COVID dashboards, it was crystal clear within 60 that they were updating daily, sometimes hourly. It was crystal clear within those first 2 months where the real those individuals who were suffering the harshest consequence from COVID were those with the obesity.
Yes.
And by the summer of 2020, the Center for Disease Control finally came out and said that it was like 94% of the fatalities were those elderly with, on average, four comorbidities. So we are now all these years later, and we still haven't. There should be a public messaging out there, but people are undercutting RFK Jr. when he's trying to talk about this, mm-hmm. that we've got to address that primary, bring Americans back to health. How many people have you heard ridicule make America healthy again?
Which is awful. Everybody should want to have that as a goal.
They've been doing that.
For the children.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The people who have been undermining that message and ridiculing, well, what does RFK Jr. know? He's an anti-vaxxer. He's this. And he has said over and over again that the real science has never been tested in some of these issues. That's the same thing I would say.
Well,
anybody who actually cares about people would say the same thing.
Yeah, because how can you make an informed decision if you don't have the right information to make that decision?
You cannot.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So instead of being just told something,
right?
And again, I have lots of parents and we, you know, who have done lots of research on issues such as vaccines, and upon their own research, they made a decision. And they dug for some of that research. Mm-hmm. So, and some of that research, and I've talked about this before, is not on a piece of paper from some company or some scientific, you know, research. It's legit when I see family after family after family saying the same thing.
Right.
It's not a coincidence anymore. Right. And now you have to look into, well, what's the cause?
So I know we only have seconds left here. I appreciate you coming in and thinking back to the COVID again and the censorship that was happening on social media. I was posting valid information from people who were really on the front lines dealing with it every day. And often it would get bumped off of social media.
Yeah, again, you know, and again, in this article, it does talk about how you can remedy these things.
Yes.
But it's you know, kind of like ship moving the Titanic, you know, mm-hmm. it takes a little bit. So that's why, again, I don't know if it can be done in 4 years.
So
it needs to continue.
It needs to continue. And that,
despite who gets into office.
That's the big fear now. And we're just about out of time, Robbie.
Yes, we are.
Well, everybody have a wonderful weekend. Tracy Haight, registered dietitian, HudsonValleyNutritionWorks.com. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, meet me back here Monday morning at 6 on The Beacon. Tom@HVFocus.com, where you can write to us and write down this phone number, 845-831-1147.